Welcome to the Premier Academy 360 podcast, brought to you by VSP Global. We'll bring you regular topical insights and advice from your peers and subject matter experts. Here's your host, Jim Castor, Vice President of VSP Provider Relations.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for the Premier Academy 360 podcast. Today's episode is going to take a look at something I know many of us in this industry have been hearing more about in the media, and that is the loan forgiveness requirements from the Paycheck Protection Program as a part of the CARES Act. If you applied for and received funding from this program, you may have questions about the government guidelines related to forgiveness of these loans. We hope sharing some of these experiences of our guests today will provide you some insights. On that note, though, we do need to point out we're not providing professional, financial, medical, or legal advice. We recommend you consult with your experts that you rely on for your practice for further information. So with that said, joining me to talk about this today is Dr. Brian Heitmeier from Kent, Washington. Dr. Heitmeier is a dry eye specialist and has been practicing for 16 years. Prior to co-founding Clearview Vision Center, he worked at Lomas Eye Care Center, where he co-managed over 4,000 LASIK and cataract patients. He's an active member of the AOA, King County Optometric Society, and the Optometric Physicians of Washington. So on that note, Dr. Heitmeier, can you tell us a little bit more about you, your practice, and your experience with the PPP loans?
Hi, Jim. Yes. So our practice began in March of 2008. We now have 28 employees, which includes four doctors, two partners, and two full-time associates. Certainly has been an interesting time and a huge learning opportunity for us. We were one of the first areas to have cases of COVID-19. And so we actually stopped our routine care back in March. March 19th was the official date that we stopped. Stay-at-home orders by Governor Inslee were in effect beginning March 23rd. And we recently just reopened for routine care this Monday, actually Monday the 18th. And so we're slowly easing back into things. We have lots of protocols in place. We've reduced the schedule to sort of allow for social distancing and allowed to do the proper sanitization procedures. So it's definitely an interesting time and definitely a challenging time as well.
Yeah, definitely. And interesting that you said you started your practice in 2008, right around the last major recession in our country, right?
That's right, yes.
So tell us a little bit about your experience with the CARES Act and the PPP loans program.
So the good thing is we actually have a very good CPA accountant that has held our hand throughout this whole process. Because we were one of the first states declared a disaster area, it really opened up opportunities for us to apply early for economic disaster relief funds. We actually ended up applying for them twice because the program had changed a little bit with the CARES Act to simplify the application process and then allow access to a grant that is forgiven in the process as well, too. So we actually applied for the PPP forgiveness or PPP loan during the first round of funding through the SBA, and then actually received our funding.
Ah, okay, very good. So tell me a little bit about the process you went through to apply for forgiveness. First thing I would like for you to address is, tell me a little bit about the moment when you thought to yourself, all right, I really need to look into this and I need to move forward. What was your thought process at that point? And what compelled you to move forward and apply for it? And then tell me more about the process of actually getting through the funding approach.
I think there were so many unknowns with this pandemic, and especially being identified as one of the first hotspots, it was thought that Washington State was really going to be in deep trouble. Fortunately, they instituted the stay-at-home orders. There's a lot of companies that allow for telehealth, so it ended up not being as bad as we thought it would, but we had no idea how long this would go on, and the lack of cash flow is really devastating for a business. So we identified that we needed to get our hands on as much cash as possible to be able to help sustain the business financially through this period. And then also after, knowing that it could be a little challenging once we were able to open our doors and see patients again. So we applied for a business line of credit. We applied for the economic disaster relief and then also applied for the Paycheck Protection Program through a local bank that we used for equipment financing.
Mm-hmm. And so on that PPP loan program, you applied through the bank. Talk to me a little bit about the process you had to go through. What did you have to gather? What materials did you need? And what did you learn in that process?
So there's a lot of information we had to gather. We use a payroll service. So fortunately, pulling the payroll reports for last year were pretty easy to do. We actually had to pull our Form 941 employer tax reports to be able to submit. So there's a lot of information that we just had to gather in advance. We tried to pull together a digital file once we knew what the application was looking like. And then it was just a matter of waiting until the banks were actually accepting applications. Each bank was a little bit different in their requirements. So there were some extra things that they asked for along the way in terms of financials in order to submit the information for the loan.
Right. Did your bank have additional requirements above and beyond what, the government was looking for?
Beyond the application, in terms of the information we put on the application, they did want to see some of our personal credit histories and some other information that wasn't specifically listed on the application.
Mm-hmm. And what were some of the major rules or guidelines you encountered as you, from the SBA as it relates to the loan forgiveness program?
The interesting thing is, I think the idea behind the program was to get money in the hands of people quickly. But unfortunately, a lot of the rules weren't initially disseminated to us, and we're still kind of finding out what some of that information is. But I think generally what we know is that there's 56 days from receipt of the funds to use the money. The expenses that you can use the money towards are at least 75% towards payroll expenses. You can use up to 25% for rent and utility payments. And the goal of the program really is to restore staffing and payroll levels back to the pre-COVID amounts by the end of the 8-week term. So still some guidance is missing from the SBA, and it may be different from lender to lender in terms of what they're requiring. But in general, I think being conservative in how you're using the money in your calculations is probably a good idea. And then also just generally asking yourself, would I have spent this money in this way had it not been given to me by the government? And I think if you can answer yes to that question, then most likely you're probably in good shape for forgiveness.
Wow, that sounds a little anxiety producing, right? If you don't know the complete rules of the game, but you're getting this money and thinking, oh my goodness, are they going to come back and ask me how I use the money? Is that creating any anxiety for you?
I would say this whole pandemic has been anxiety ridden on many levels. But yes, absolutely. I think accepting this large amount of money and not really knowing the rules of the game certainly is unnerving. And I think it would be nice to have known the rules in advance of us starting to spend the money, because we may have chosen to do things a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm. So knowing that you said that you have 56 days to, basically use the funds. So tell me a little bit about how that's occurring. So you've gotten the money. Talk a little bit about how you've turned around and started to use it with employees. Have you used it on rent? Have you used it for your employees? Just walk through a little bit of how you're spending it at this point.
Yeah, so we're definitely using it all those things. We rent our space, so we're certainly using it for rent payments. We provide healthcare insurance to our employees, so we're using some of the funds towards the premiums that we pay for the employees to have health insurance. We also do 401k with match. We're using funds for that piece as well, too. And then our CPA had advised us to actually change the way we're doing payroll. Normally, we would do it on a biweekly period. She asked us to run payroll weekly so that we would have a little better ability to track how the funds are being used, and then also monitoring how close we are getting to utilizing the funds to meet our FTE and payroll guidelines.
Interesting. So why would going on a weekly schedule versus biweekly help you in that process of monitoring?
I think it allows you to make adjustments a little bit more quickly. 8 weeks goes by very quickly. We're already halfway through our PPP period. So if you're able to monitor on a weekly basis how much is being spent instead of waiting to see what happens every 2 weeks, I think it gives you a little bit more flexibility and you're able to be a little bit more nimble in making changes to reach your goal.
Right. So interesting. So how about the use of loan funds to pay like doctor owner salaries, or are you using that money specifically for staff members?
So we as owners do put ourselves on payroll. So I think generally if an owner is normally on payroll and they're normally having the appropriate taxes taken out, they likely would qualify to use the PP funds on themselves. Keep in mind that reimbursement is capped at $100,000. So during this 8-week period, that equates to $15,385. But that being said, there's many nuances based on how a practice files its taxes. So definitely clarifying with a CPA would be wise.
Right. That's good advice. And the fact that you knew exactly how much money that equated to, roughly $15,000, means that you are very focused on how the money is getting spent and clear about the rules. I think the point there being is that it sounds like you've got a very good grip on how the program works to the best of your knowledge and how you're ultimately using those dollars out from here. So, I'm wondering if you've seen any unintended consequences as a result of utilizing the Paycheck Protection Program. Anything that surprised you or has surprised you so far?
I think there's two big things that came up. I believe when they were thinking about the CARES Act, it really was designed for probably a shorter period of time. I think they thought the shutdown would last 2, maybe 4 weeks, but in reality, it went on much longer than that. So unfortunately, what many practices found themselves doing is receiving PPP funds, yet still being under a shutdown and not allowed to see patients, which really tied their hands on how they were able to use the money. There also was a conflict that was created by the $600 a week federal pandemic benefit for unemployment. There are certain states that pay at a higher percentage of unemployment in terms of the dollars that the employees would normally make. So when you add that $600 on top of that, many employees find themselves making more money on unemployment and staying at home. But on the flip side, the employers now are put in this difficult position. We have these PPP funds that need to be utilized. And with that is the requirement to bring employees off of the unemployment system and to put them back on payroll, which would be less than what they would be making on these unemployment benefits. So it definitely is a challenge and was very stressful to try to explain to your employees why it's important for them to come back to work. And sort of the thought process behind these PPP funds, that it's truly designed to decrease the burden on the unemployment system, but at the same time, it's helping small businesses remain viable. So after the end of this pandemic, they still have a place to go to work to.
All right. So back related to the use of your qualified expenses, you kind of alluded to earlier in our conversation that, you know, you were closed. You have 56 days to use the money. So that suggests to me there may be practices, maybe even yours, where you might have received funding, but you don't have qualified expenses that total enough for the amount that the government gave you. So how would you advise practices that might be in that situation? What are you supposed to do with unused funds?
Well, keep in mind, you can always give the money back. There's still a bit of uncertainty, not knowing what the future holds, and cash flow still may be a bit challenging for practices. In terms of a loan, you can actually keep the money. So after the end of the forgiveness period, the money basically is yours for a 2-year payment term at 1% interest. So essentially, you can look at it as free money. It's hard to get a loan with that good of terms. And then there's no fees or prepayment penalty on the money as well, too. So you can decide, hang on to it for a little bit longer, see what the future holds. If you don't need it, you can always pay it back later.
Right. Okay. Good information. So, one of the things that strikes me as another potential challenge is the documentation around all of this. And I'm going to broaden this question a little bit because I know you've got this program with the PPP. You have also potentially practices that may have applied for the EIDL program. And we know HHS has been providing funding related to that. And each of them have different rules and guidelines around how they're used and all the rest of that. So I'm curious from your perspective, how are you managing to maintain the documentation you need, managing the money that comes from these different types of things? What has been your system and how would you advise other practices to keep it all straight?
I think early advice given to us was to take the money that you were receiving and open accounts and keep them in separate accounts. So it made accountability for where the funds were going to a little bit easier to track. The forgiveness application actually spells out three areas of documentation that we are responsible for. The first being payroll. So you need to account for payroll reports, which should be easy again to generate from your payroll providers. Payroll tax filing reports, typically in the form of your 941s. Quarterly tax filings that you might make to your state for unemployment or employment taxes, and then payment receipts, canceled checks, or account statements to document your employer contributions for employee health insurance and retirement plans. You need to be responsible and submit the FTE, your full-time equivalents, for your pre-COVID comparison, and then for the eight-week period of the funding. And then under the non-payroll bucket, documentation to verify obligations. So specifically, they're asking for copies of leases that are in force, mortgage lender account statements if you're using the funds for interest payments, and then utility payments with invoice copies for the money that you might be using there. In terms of the economic disaster relief and the PPP funds, you can't overlap those. So you need to be careful that you're not spending money from each of those buckets on the same thing. So make sure you're just utilizing the PPP for what those funds are intended for, and you're not overlapping with other funding sources.
Right, thank you. And this is probably a granular question, but I've heard some doctors talking about how they're literally archiving their documentation. So I've heard some are using binders, some have delegated to their accountants. What's been your system for keeping it all straight?
So I have a couple systems. AOA came out with a really nice Excel spreadsheet calculator that you can actually download from their website. You basically input the dollar amount of the loan, and it immediately breaks up the funds into the 75% that's utilized for payroll, and then the 25% for non-payroll expenses. So each week I'm going in to enter what the money is being used for, and it allows you to use a drop-down menu to designate what each of the expenses are for. I'm keeping hard copies of everything in a binder in terms of any invoices that we're utilizing for utility payments. And then as we get a little closer to the end, the idea being I'll just scan everything into a digital file so it's very easy to transfer to the lender. I heard it explained that when you're providing documentation, you need to provide a story that a fifth grader, for instance, could pick up and understand how you're spending these dollars. So I think the more detail you can provide, it probably will be helpful in making sure that the funds are forgiven.
Right, right. All right. So curious, I'm going to go back to this timing requirement with PPP. How does the timing of the loan funding affect how you use it, right? So you get the money on a certain date. What must you be thinking about as far as you disperse it from that point forward?
Right. So technically the counter starts ticking when the funds are received in your account. So that is day one of the 56-day period. Now, with the new forgiveness application that was just published last Friday, they've clarified what's called an alternative payroll covered period. And essentially, it's for administrative convenience. It's allowing you to set your 56-day period to start at the first full pay period. So the exact example they give in the application is, let's say you're funded on April 20th, and a new pay period starts on April 26th. You can elect or designate April 26th as your start date, and then that would make your end date June 20th for the 56-day period.
Got it. It's nice to have that flexibility. So can you speak a little bit about how this program interacts with the Family Leave Act?
So the Families First FMLA expansion gives a number of payroll, leave, and unemployment tax credits to practice owners during the COVID crisis, but you cannot double dip by using the PPP and claiming these tax credits as well, too. So you just have to be careful that you're not using both programs. They are very separate and not intended to be utilized at the same time.
Got it. Okay. So talk a little bit about a situation where a staff member has decided they're not going to return to work and it impacts the loan requirement, right? You have a certain number of FTEs, you apply for, let's say you've got 20 employees, you apply for the funding, get it back, and then one of your 20 says, I'm not coming back. So how do you manage that?
So they've given us four FTE reduction exemptions, the first being where an employee would reject a good faith offer to rehire them during the covered period. So, for example, in our office, we had to furlough staff. When we brought them back, we presented them with a letter that they could either accept or decline and then had to sign off on. So if they declined the employment, you can use that as an exemption. If an employee is fired for cause during the 8-week period, that is another FTE exemption. Employees that voluntarily resign is a third. And then if an employee is requested and you've granted them a reduction in hours, say they are navigating homeschooling or childcare, that can also be an FTE exemption as well too. So this all should be documented. It's not technically requested in the forgiveness application, but there is a 6-year window where you could potentially be audited and you need to provide documentation if you ever were audited.
Right. Okay. So talk a little bit about what happens if the funds are not used appropriately. What has the government said their potential consequences are?
So fortunately, it's not an all or none. The forgiveness application actually has a formula that you can enter your information in to determine what percentage would be forgiven and what would be converted into a loan.
Okay. All right. So basically, at the end of the day, if you don't, back to our earlier conversations, if you don't use it for PPP purposes, it just converts to a loan at a very low interest rate, right?
Exactly. 2-year term, 1%, or you can give it back.
Right. Okay. Very good. So as we wrap up, is there any advice that you'd like to share with your peers who may be navigating all of this right now?
I think just be super conservative in your estimates. Realize that the government is really good at identifying fraud and waste, and you can guarantee there will likely be audits after this law is all said and done. There are certainly some pretty hefty fines and prison time mentioned in the forgiveness application. So I think, again, just going back to that rule, is it something I would have spent money on if I did not have this money given to me? Is a good way to think about things. And do your best not to game the system. The spirit of the program really is to bring employees back, to give you money to be viable once this is all said and done. So I think if you're keeping that in mind, hopefully you'll be in good shape at the end of it. The other piece I would mention is rules are still coming out, so you need to make sure that you're still keeping in touch with your lender, looking at the SBA website for further clarification on some of these rules that might be announced as time passes.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Are you actually going out to the SBA website every week?
Not every week, but I think as we get a little closer to the deadline, it's certainly something we'll look at. And our CPA is actually really good. She's constantly monitoring that stuff, so we also look to her for guidance on some of the rule clarifications that roll out.
Great. Well, that is really great advice. Thank you very much. I think that your peers that listen in on today's podcast are going to get a lot of helpful information on how to move forward with this program. And it was a pleasure chatting with you today. Thank you for sharing your story, your time, and your insights. For those of you listening, we hope this podcast and all of the others that are in the library continue to provide you with helpful information while you're on the go. We hope this gave you some things to think about now and moving forward. Thank you for joining us today for the Premier Academy 360 podcast. I'm Jim Castor. Stay safe, everyone.
This has been the Premier Academy 360 podcast, brought to you by VSP Global. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to check out podcasts.vspproviderhub.com for a comprehensive collection of business building training and education tailored to VSP Network doctors and staff. This premier program benefit is currently available to all network practices. Visit podcasts.vspproviderhub.com to learn more.